Well, I realize I am here on in something of a transition time for Cokesbury. Paul and Rita Wolf have certainly retired after serving so well here for many years and serving faithfully and fruitfully across several decades of ministry. I've always respected and so appreciated Paul's ministry and friendship over these years, and celebrate with them now that they've entered into the retired relationship. I must say, when I heard Sheila Bates was coming as a senior pastor, I got really excited for you, as well as for her, but for you. I had the privilege of working with Sheila for several years and knowing her ministry and know her as the gifted preacher she is, the compelling leader, and this person who has this sort of overflowing, joyful, kind of infectious spirit. So I'm excited for all of you and for this church and for, I just wonder what God has in store. So God bless you during these days of transition. I do want to share a verse of Scripture with you, actually two verses, but the first is from John's Gospel. We have the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And the three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, are called the Synoptic Gospels, which means synopsis. They represent something of a synopsis of the life and ministry, teaching of Jesus, what Jesus said, what Jesus did, where he was when he did it, what he said, how he said it, who was present, and what happened as a result. It's a narrative of something of what I would call the what of Jesus. The what of Jesus. But when you read John's Gospel, there's a little different twist, because not only does John talk about the what of Jesus, but John, the writer of John's Gospel, is interested also in helping us see the why of Jesus. So we need to read John's Gospel on two levels. One is what I would call an informational level. The other is to go to a deeper level, to what I would call a transformational level. So think about that as we read just one verse. Jesus, this is a story that comes right after the resurrection. So Jesus had appeared to the disciples the night of the resurrection. Thomas, one of the disciples, was not present. So he came back a week later and appeared to them as the risen Christ again. And Thomas was present. Now, Thomas had said to his friends, I don't believe that he rose from the dead, and I won't believe till I can touch that place where his side was pierced and put my fingers and the nail prints in his hand. And so Thomas was present when Jesus, the risen Christ, came again, and he put his hand in Jesus' side. He touched those nail prints in his hand. He said, my Lord and my God. And Jesus responded in this way: have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and have yet come to believe. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet come to believe. And then one other verse from Hebrews 11, from the this chapter, which is a litany of faith, but the very first verse gives us a definition of faith. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. The assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. May God bless this reading and our hearing of his holy word. Would you bow with me in prayer? And now, gracious God, may this word that is your word come alive in each of us in such a way that it makes a difference in how we live this day and in how we live in the week ahead. Amen. A friend of mine in North Carolina is starting a new church. He's been at it for 2 years. He's in the Chapel Hill, Pittsburgh area of North Carolina. If you know Chapel Hill, the Research Triangle, Durham, Raleigh, and Chapel Hill. So he's been at it 2 years. They've had only one worship service. They're going to start worship on a weekly basis, September 15th. Up until now, they've been meeting in what he calls local tables. These are gatherings of groups in different homes around the community where they're starting this new church. They've had about 100 to 125 people participate in the local tables, and they believe they're ready to launch weekly worship. They decided that since they hadn't really worshiped as a total congregation or even come together in any way except to do their regular mission projects, they would do an Easter sunrise service, and they chose the Haw River Bridge to do the service on, which for some time has been closed to vehicles and only open to pedestrians. So a week before Easter Sunday, my friend went to walk the bridge. He wanted to kind of get a feel for it, see how they would set up for Easter Sunday worship. He said the bridge is filled with graffiti. All the pavement that's there is just covered with graffiti. The railings along the side are covered with graffiti. But when he walked the bridge, he just kind of looked around. He looked at the trees and the sky and the birds flying over. He looked over at the river below. He said he got to the other end of the bridge, and he finally looked down right in front of him, and there were three words painted on the pavement: "We are alive." And he thought, okay, here's my Easter message. We are alive. Jesus lives, so we live. And then he said, I'm going to walk this one more time. I'm going to see what else I might see amidst the graffiti, if there are any other messages that might apply. And he said, of course, there are things there you don't really want to read, and there's some you do. It's all that stuff. But he said, as he looked here and there, walking the bridge, he would see a word here, a phrase here, that all applied to resurrection. He said it was like seeing the unseen. Seeing the unseen. I thought of this experience he shared when I reflected on Jesus' words to Thomas and on the Hebrew writer's words about faith. And how these words are for us. We have not seen as did those first disciples. They saw the risen Christ. They were with Jesus when he walked this earth. They saw him face to face. We have not seen as they did. So we are compelled to believe in a different way. We are to see the unseen. We are to see through eyes of faith. We're to see through eyes of faith so that we see the unseen and we too come to believe. Now, admittedly, it's not always easy to see the unseen and to see clearly. This is certainly true when we look at each other or we look at people in our community. We look at people in our neighborhoods. It's not easy to see the unseen and see exactly what we need to see when we look at other people. I think of Mark Roberts' story. Mark was the associate pastor back in the 90s when I was here for a couple of those years. Mark had an appointment one day, somebody coming. He had just enough time. He needed to pick up something over in this shopping center over this way. He thought, I've got just enough time to run over there and pick it up and come back and make my appointment. So he headed out. He picked up his item. He went to the checkout line, and there was a lady and a little boy in front of him. And she was about through checking out, so he said, good. He looked at his watch. I'm going to make it. I'm on time. Everything's going to be fine. And he said, you know, all was going well, and she finished checking out, and she was stepping away when her little boy said, Mom, can I have a candy bar? And she said, sure you can. And he watched as this little boy went down every row of candy, feeling every one of them. You know how they are. They're on both sides of the aisle. So he had a lot to cover. You know, there he went, and Mark is standing there, and he said, well, you know, this anxiety is welling up inside of him, and it's getting ready to explode. He was on the verge of saying something to this lady when he caught a glimpse of the little boy's face, and he realized the child was blind. He could not see. The only way he could pick out a candy bar was to feel it, so he needed to feel every one so he would pick out just the right one. Of course, Mark said, you know, I felt about this high at that point. Things did not appear as they were. He said, I saw something I had not seen. Who do you see when you look at somebody else? Who do we see when we look at each other? It's not easy to see clearly. We have our own lens, our own perspective, shaped by our environment, our assumptions, our biases, our experiences. Things are not always as they appear. I wonder how many times I've not seen clearly. It made some comment too quickly or made some decision and acted on it because I didn't see clearly, because my vision was obscured. I submit to you, we're compelled to be those who see in a different way, to look at others, not just at the surface level, but to look deeper. Then we can better see the unseen, that which we may not have seen at first. When we see in that different way, we move from information to transformation. We move from head to heart. I submit we're called to be those who look deeper beyond the surface and see the unseen when we look at each other. We're compelled also to do the same when we look at the church. What do you see when you look at the church? What do you see? We spend a lot of time in the church thinking and talking about what we're doing. We've done that this morning. It's a good thing. We celebrate and we remember and we're grateful for all the opportunities we have and all the things going on. And we've heard about many of those this morning. How good it is to have these things that we're doing. Essentially, we see when we look at the church, at the very least, what I would call the what of the church. The what of the church. We think of what we're doing in worship, Sunday school, small groups, mission, not only this mission trip, but the trip that the youth are going on and we'll be celebrating today, this trip that's before them. We think about music, men, women, ministry, children, you know, all of the kinds of things, all the activities. We think about the what of the church, but I would invite us to look deeper beyond the what to the why of the church. The what is typically informational, but the why of the church, I submit to you, is transformational, because the why gets us to purpose. It gets us to the reason, the very reason we are here, why we have church anyway, why we do all the what. I love the way Michael Jr. talks about this. He talks about the what and the why. Michael Jr. is a stand-up comedian. He says, my what is stand-up comedy, but my why is to inspire people to walk toward their purpose. He has a video called Know Your Why. Take a look.
This is called How Do I Know? And a lot of times when people hear the phrase, how do I know, the next thing they say is what? How do I know what? But the key really isn't to know what. The key is to know why. Because when you know your why, you have options on what your what can be. For instance, my why is to inspire people to walk in purpose. My what is stand-up comedy. My what is writing books. My what can be going out with some friends to eat. In fact, another what that has moved me towards my why is a web series that we have out now called Break Time. So every Wednesday at 3 o'clock, you should subscribe to the channel. We do a series called Break Time on YouTube. So 3 o'clock, we drop a new episode. One episode in particular, I'm about to show you a clip to. We were in Winston-Salem. So Break Time, this is how it works. I travel the country, I do stand-up comedy, probably an hour, hour and a half at an event. And in the middle of my show, I'll just sit down and start talking to the audience. And funny just happens. Or I'll meet somebody who's really interesting. So I met this one guy, and he said that he teaches music at a school. I was like, all right, you teach music, you know, can you sing? And then I'm just going to show you the clip. Check it. So you're a musical director.
Cool. Yes, sir.
All right, so Let me get a couple bars of like Amazing Grace. Can you do the first part of that? Go ahead.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Wow. That bro could sing. You know what I'm saying?
All right. Now, what you give me the version is if your uncle just got out of jail, you got shot in the back when you was a kid. I'm just saying, let me see the hood version real quick, if you know which version I'm talking about. Just see if that exists. Let me see what you got.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
So here's the thing. The first time I asked him to sing, he knew what he was doing. The second time I asked him to sing, he knew why he was doing it. When you know your why, your what has more impact, because you're walking in or towards your purpose.
Michael Jr., how important it is to know the why. We can talk about the what all day long, but boy, when it comes from this deeper place, from our why, that's what makes the difference in the what. It makes all the difference in the world. The why of Cokesbury is very simple. To bring Christ to people and people to Christ. Very simple. There's a lot of what out there as to how you're seeking to go about doing that, make that happen, and be the best you can be at that. Hang on to the why. Know your why. It makes what you do transformational, and that makes all the difference, because that's the greater purpose. That's the deeper purpose. That's the one, I submit, that would draw all of us to it. When we get deeper, it draws us to it. God uses it to draw us to it so that he can help us live into the what in ways that are transformational for us and for all those around us. We see the unseen, I submit, when we look beyond the what of the church to the why of the church. Finally, I would say we see the unseen when we look beyond the what of Jesus to the why of Jesus. I've thought many times about the fact that the risen Christ, appeared to his disciples several times. Not just one time, but more than one time, several times. In fact, many more than are recorded in the Scripture. And I thought about that, and I thought really what Jesus, at least one thing he was about doing, was trying to help them get beyond the what of Jesus to the why of Jesus. Because he was not going to be around in the same way he had been around. And they were the ones who were being handed this mission, handed this great work of God. They were being sent, like we're sent, to do God's work. And they were being sent to do that. He was turning it over to them in that sense. He said, I'll be with you always, not in the way I have been, but I'll be with you always. He wanted them to get beyond the what to the why. I just thought if Thomas had not seen the risen Christ, he may have never gotten beyond the what. He might have just had the memory of everything that had happened, and that was it. But not the experience of getting deeper and getting to the why of Jesus and becoming a part of those, being a part of those who live that out in the world around them. Jesus was trying to move them from information to transformation. Here's how, two more verses from that same chapter of John's Gospel says it. Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which is not written in this book. But these are written so that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that through believing you may have life in his name. This is the heart of the why. To see the unseen, to see through eyes of faith, the conviction of things not seen. To know the presence of the living Christ and so believe, so that others may see the unseen and they too come to believe. They too move from information to transformation. They too come to believe, and in believing have life in his name. Life now and life forever. Do you see? Do you see?